finished a new book that he thinks may be slightly controversial, and he's been summoned to his publisher's office. And instead of meeting with his editor, he's actually summoned into his publisher's office. This is where it picks up. A secretary quickly escorted Duncan into Gaudy's office and left immediately. Gaudy, according to Duncan's journal, was a bearded man of indeterminate age, his gaunt flesh wrapped across sharp cheekbones. He sat behind his desk, staring at the room's fireplace. Duncan moved to sit, but Gaudy raised one hand, palm out, in abeyance. The calm behind the gesture, almost trance-like, made Duncan reluctant to disobey the man, but, quote, also irritated me intensely. I had the feeling he knew something I did not, something I wanted to know. They remained in those positions, respectively sitting and standing, for over 5 minutes. Duncan somehow sensed that just as he should not sit down, he also should not speak. I began to think this man held some power over me, he said. When Duncan finally lifted his bespectacled face to stare at Duncan, Duncan saw an expression of absolute peace on the man's face. Relieved, he again moved to sit down, only to again be told through a gesture to remain standing. Duncan began to wonder if his publisher had gone insane. As the fire behind them began to die, Gaudy smiled and broke the silence. He stared at the fireplace as he spoke and steepled his fingers, elbows on the desk. He appeared not to draw a single extra breath. He said, "You need not sit and thus defile my perfectly good chair, because it will take no time at all to say what needs to be said to you. Once I have said what I am going to say to you, I would like you to leave immediately and never return. You are no longer welcome here and never will be welcome again. Your manuscript has performed the useful function of warming us, a function 1,000 times more beneficial than anything it might have hoped to accomplish, as a series of letters strung together into words, phrases, sentences, paragraphs, and chapters. The fire has purified it, in much the same manner as I would like at this moment, and will desire at all moments in the future to purify you, were it not outside the legal, if not moral, boundaries placed upon us by the law and society in general. By this time, it ought to be clear to you, Mr. Shriek, that we do not intend to buy the rights to your book." And I use the word book in its loosest possible sense, nor to its ashes, although I would sooner buy the rights to its ashes than its unblemished pages. However, on the off chance that you still do not comprehend what I am saying to you, and allowing for the possibility that you may have entered a state of shock, I shall continue to talk until you leave this room, which happy event I hope will take place before very much longer, as the sight of you makes me ill. Mr. Shriek, as you must be aware, Frank Wright and Luden has a history that goes back more than 500 years, and in that time we have published our share of controversial books. Your first book, which, by the way, you may be fascinated to know, is as of this moment out of print, was the 41st book to be banned by the various antechambers of ambergris over the years. We certainly have no qualms in that respect. Nor have we neglected to publish books on the most arcane and obscure topics dreamt of by the human brain. As you are no doubt aware, despite the fact that many titles no longer have even a nostalgic relevance, we keep our entire and considerable backlist in print. Pelagic snail rituals of the lower archipelago comes to mind, there being no such snail still extant, nor such an archipelago, still we keep it in print. But we will make an exception for your first book, which shall be banished from all of our catalogs as well. As I would have hoped you had guessed by now, although you have not left this room never to return, we do not like your new book very much. In fact, to say I do not like your book would be like calling a mighty tree a seedling. I loathe your book, Mr. Shriek, and yet the word loathe cannot convey in even a 1,000th part the full depths of my hatred for this book and by extension you. But perhaps I should be more specific. Maybe specifics will allow you to overcome this current, potentially fatal inertia tied, no doubt, to the aforementioned shock that stops you from leaving this office. Look, the last scrap of your manuscript has become a flake of ash floating above the fireplace. What a shame. Perhaps you would like an urn. Well, you can't have one. Because not only do we not have an urn, but even if we did, we would not allow you to use it for the transport of the ashes, if only from the fear that you might find some way to reconstruct the book for them. And yes, we do know it is likely you have a copy of the manuscript, but we will feel a certain warmth in our hearts if by burning this copy we can at least slow down your reckless and obstinate attempt to publish this cretinous piece of excrement. Returning to the specifics of our arguments against this document. Your insipid stupidity is evident from the first word, the first sentence, of the first paragraph of your acknowledgments page, the, and from there the sense of simple-minded, pitiable absence of thought pervades all of the first paragraph, until by the roaring crescendo of imbecility leading up to the last word of the first paragraph again, any possible authority the reader might have granted the author has been completely undermined by your inability to in any way convey even an unoriginal thought. And yet in comparison to the dull-witted pedantry of the second paragraph, the first paragraph positively shines with genius and degenerate brilliance. Perhaps at this point in our little chat, I should repeat that I don't very much like this book. What other rhetorical gems might have escaped Gaudi's lips, we'll never know, for Duncan chose that moment to overcome his inertia and leave those offices forever. That's the first excerpt.
That's not based on any personal experience.
No, I think that's actually the accumulated frustration of 20, 30 years. So one small wind-zipped area. Forgive me, I'm having a little bit of a cold, so it's a little difficult for me to read without sounding nasal. In this next section, the most important thing to know is that Ambergris, the imaginary city in which this book is set,